In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And we are live on most of our normal places, and this is the Energemetra 6 podcast. We're on episode 23, and we're just going to pretend that I haven't been trying for the past, 20 minutes to make this stupid thing work, and we're just going to go like it worked perfectly. So, today we have, we're doing The Boy from the Megalith. Elijah's here to read Tom Neillian again, and Mel's going to be reading Ilsa, and thank you everybody for being here. I appreciate it to all of our listeners. And before we get started, real fast, let me go with that. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value for value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. So welcome everybody. The introduction to The Boy from the Megalith is this. Tom Neillian's strange odyssey concluded in alliance with the odds who followed the bright star. It began with the death of those he loved most, in the most ignominious circumstances any of the people could possibly imagine. Author's note, I've been told this story is difficult for some readers to immerse themselves in. The reason seems obvious to me. Living in an alien being's thoughts is not for everyone. I really did try to create a sense of what it must be to live as one of the people for this story. If that doesn't appeal to you, dear reader, I offer my apologies. My hope, however, is to leave you with a window into the world of Tom Neillian, the inimitable boy from the darkness. And this is Nociferian Outcast, Episode 1, The Boy from the Megalith. Year 2220 NST, The Void, Aurora Galaxy.
Tom Neillian cowered against the deck, hatred filling his soul.
Now I'm gonna drain you too, whelp!
Bausch's ugly, puggish face was twisted into an even uglier expression as he stepped forward, sneering down at Tom through bloodshot eyes. Tom bent his head, fighting shock and trying not to stare at the gray corpses of his clan, now slowly crumbling to dust behind the shining bulk of the brute that towered over him. Bausch was almost too bright to look at, and he must have seen the pain in Tom's eyes when he tried to look up, then had to turn his head away. Bausch laughed, his contempt crushing Tom to the deck even harder than the wave of blue energy that Bausch ground mercilessly into him. It was all Tom could do to keep breathing. Around him stood a half-circle of Bausch's clan mates and 3 other alphas. At least they weren't smirking. 2 looked worried. The others were simply solemn.
Your chief shouldn't have challenged me. Now you all get to see why Bausch is boss.
He laughed again, obviously pleased with his wordplay. The fact that Bausch was so wrong, and so abysmally stupid, was doubly hard to take. Tom's chief, his father, Neillian, had only been trying to make a point to the other alpha. Now he was dead. And Tom was about to be. The first lance of pain took Tom's breath away completely as Bausch reached into Tom's ka and began ripping away the energy of life. Agony writhed up and down his nerves, radiating from his core, where his ka lived, out into his limbs. His body was consuming itself, and the torture had just begun. Tom was lost in the pain even before he felt the top layer of his aura siphoned away, and Bausch began feeding in earnest. Tom's clan had not forgotten him, though, even in death. The moment lasted an eternity. Then an ancestral Iku came upon Tom, and the pain faded into white-hot rage. He was still trapped, could still feel his life energy being drawn into the crystalline matrices of Bausch's body, but his need for relief was replaced with an unquenchable desire to destroy the monster who had already killed his clan. Tom struggled in vain, howling as he felt the fabric of his very soul being ripped away from him, desperate to get at Bausch. It was futile. Then, without warning, the torment stopped. Bausch laughed again as Tom's body equalized, the energy in his matrix restabilizing and refilling the hole Bausch had made in his core. It left Tom's entire being weaker. Tom gasped, his rage forgotten in the relief, but it was short-lived.
I'ma make you cry, Tiny. Your chief should have spaced you and you a whelped man spawn.
Then the pain was back, and somehow, impossibly, it was even worse than before. Tom wasn't sure how long it lasted. It could have been a minute or a day. Four more agonizing, unbearable times, Bausch stopped short of actually killing Tom to taunt him and allow his life energy to seep from his body, refilling his core less and less completely each time. At some point, Tom lost himself in the Iku, which crowded around him, many trying to comfort him as his essence was slowly depleted. At some point, full awareness returned. Tom wasn't sure why. He could feel death's chilly breath on his face, and his eyelids fluttered. Bausch had stopped. It had been too long. Why wasn't he dead? An unconscious whine escaped his lips. From above, he heard Bausch grunt. As if from a great distance, a voice said,
"Wish this one for myself."
Dimly, he recognized Ilya, Bausch's alpha female. Bausch snarled.
"The lesson must be, I am King Chief."
Ilya's derision wasn't hidden, but compared to the bludgeon of Bausch's dull wit, she was a scalpel, precise and cutting.
"If you kill every chief who is lesser, then what will you be? King of the floating dustbin?"
Bausch grumbled something incoherent, and Tom strained to raise his head, trying to see. Ilya's eyes glittered. She mocked.
"Bausch so big strong. Bausch kill all tribe till Bausch alone."
Bausch took a step toward Ilya as if to strike her, but she pointed to her belly and her mocking deepened.
"Bausch so big strong. Crush pregnant she."
Bausch's grumbling turned into a roar. He threw his hands up in the air and turned to stomp away. Almost instantly, the little gaggle of whipped underlings began to disperse, only pausing to bow to Ilya, completely ignoring Tom's crumpled body. Tom tried to move and failed. His head dropped back onto the floor, and he heard Ilya's breathing as she stepped closer. Tom squeezed his eyes shut, waiting for her to finish what Bausch had started, but instead she hissed. All he caught of her mutter was a single phrase, half-slurred.
"The remnant."
The next thing Tom knew, he was being lifted off the deck. Tom could still feel Death's cold fingers stroking his chest where his ka flickered and guttered inside him. Its pull was inevitable, inexorable. He succumbed slowly, not wanting to die, but too weak to resist. Tom must have passed out again, because when he awoke, he was falling. In one frozen instant, Tom saw Ilya, her disgust plain on her face, framed by the walls of the feeding pit that stretched almost out of sight above him. Then he hit bottom. It didn't really hurt. The people were built tough, but he was still practically unable to move because of how thoroughly Bausch had drained him. He lay there for a long moment, feeling the pull of death. It would be a sweet relief from his current state. Then he saw the humans. The Iku must have been hovering near, because in an instant he was consumed with hunger and his vision went blood red. What happened next was a semi-conscious blur. The Iku had full control of his body, and his ka was so weak he couldn't have stopped even if he wanted to. All Tom felt was hunger. Physical pain registered dimly as he ran into something, but his vision was completely black. There was a sound far away. Without warning, a sweet, powerful sensation carried his consciousness away completely. It had a sharp, pungent feeling that made him distantly uncomfortable, but he was too caught up in the moment to care. When the Iku released control of Tom's senses and his volition returned, he was standing over a spreading pile of dust, with Ilya cursing him from above.
Void-brained fool whelp! She was breeding stock!
Ilya seemed on the verge of jumping down just to punish him, but when she saw him looking up, his eyes clear once more, she simply turned and walked away, snarling to herself. The heavy alloy door slid down from above, trapping Tom in the feeding pit with the humans. If he'd been at full strength, he would have simply leapt out of the pit and rolled under the door, but in his current state that was laughable. All he could do was watch it close. This was the lowest moment of Tom's life. The feeding pit's impossibly high walls towered over him, their micrometrically precise lines impassive to his desolation. Before, he had been too busy for the sheer magnitude of his loss to hit home. The confrontation with Bausch had been too intense, death too near. Now, with the burst of energy he gained from draining the human she, the vision still burned into his eyes, of the Alpha Queen's retreating back, he felt as if the monolith had been pulled from under him, leaving him floating in the empty blackness of the void. Clanless, alone and empty, just like the void surrounding the monolith. Tom laid back his head and keened his loss to the uncaring stars. When he looked back down, one of the humans was scuttling away from him, something clutched in its five-fingered hand. The little man stared absolute hatred at Tom, his face a rictus. Then the human sighed and slid down the wall to sit with his head in his hands, staring at the remnant of the human that Tom had just turned into a dust pile. Tom felt a stab of shame at Ilya's displeasure. He hadn't meant to do it. It had been the Iku, the ancestor spirit. The people were reduced, somehow, when they died. It was as if the living being was distilled to the essence of their personality, a mere shadow of a living being. The people didn't leave Nevettas like humans. Instead, their spirits were released to roam the universe. Inevitably, the thought called Tom's mother to his mind, and he wondered what had happened to her Nevetta. With Nelian dead, Tom would probably never know. The human, now huddled against the wall across from Tom, was still staring, tears running down his cheeks. Tom turned his face away and, sighing, concentrated on leeching what energy he could from the little group of humans without actually killing them. Humans were strange. They consumed actual matter as sustenance and the energy gathered around them purely because they were alive. Some could use the energy on purpose, while others were just dumb animals. The people were something different. They existed in a place halfway between the universe and somewhere else. The energy didn't hurt Tom when he used it as it did humans, but the only way he could replenish his reserves was by pulling it from the world around him, especially from humans. None of the people had ever been quite sure why the energy was so strong around humans, but it was, and so they became the people's primary source of food. A few among them groaned or whimpered, but none tried to attack him. They had learned long ago that the cost of attacking one of the people was death. The siphon was slow. At the fastest rate he could manage, he wouldn't be back to full strength for days, even after having accidentally killed the first human, taking her energy in a burst. Guilt pricked at Tom now that he'd had time to settle down and think about the she's death, but it was over now. Even the people couldn't turn back time. Tom was tired, His burst of energy was finally wearing off, and the room blurred around him. He lay down, keeping his siphon open, and fading slowly, inexorably, into the fugue. Tom's dream was dark, though he could still vaguely sense the world around him. The flow of time stretched into something variable and strange. The humans went about their meager business, eating and sleeping, but keeping as far from Tom as they could while Tom's consciousness was taken by the dream. Around him, the Iku of his clan swarmed. They were like the roaches that sometimes spawned in the humans' food supply. Beyond, the greater denizens of the dream lurked. They preyed upon the minds of the humans while they slept, but most were afraid of the people. Visions came and went, obscuring the dream with flashes of the past and present, as well as possible futures still unrealized. Visions were all dark, flavored by a hopelessness that had seeped into his bones. It hadn't always been so. Tom could remember a time when the visions had been different, but now, the universe was being consumed by evil, though he could only see it clearly within the dream. It was only because of the darkness that Tom could see the light when it appeared. It was so far away that at first he thought he'd imagined it. However faint, it didn't flicker or fade. It was a single light, far away, shining like a beacon in the darkness and deeper darkness of the dream. Even as his concentration was interrupted by a particularly vivid memory of his mother, Tom wondered at that tiny point of light. Time passed strangely in the fugue, but Tom could dimly sense the siphon, still slowly regenerating the energy of his matrix, sometimes fast and sometimes slow. His subjective sense of time ebbed and flowed. Dreams and visions came and went, their tendrils passing him from one to the next for what might have been hours, days, or weeks. Outside, time might be passing with metronome precision, but here it followed its own rules. Waking was instantaneous and jarring. He had been dreaming about, what was it? But something was wrong, dreadfully wrong. Tom looked around. Nothing seemed amiss at first glance. Most of the humans were asleep. Even the energy gave him no hint as to what might be happening, and there was no noise beyond the sounds of the megalith, the ship that had been his home his whole life. The sounds were comforting, likely the single most constant factor in his existence. The only time he could remember the sounds changing was when the great vessel had been shut down for maintenance when he was a child, before Bausch had become King Chief. Tom could hardly remember it. He had been barely more than a pup at the time. Then he heard it again. There had been a scraping sound, as of metal on metal. The sound came from outside the single door above him. Tom frowned in puzzlement and opened his inner eye beyond its usual slit. There was something beyond that door. He wasn't sure what it was, but it had the strangest energy pattern Tom had ever seen. It was all disjointed angles and impossibly thin lines. How were such strange angles even possible with the energy of life? It clung to the body, and that wasn't the shape of any body he recognized. Then a talon, or was it an arm, slashed down through the alloy of the door. One of the humans screamed and Tom was on his feet, energy gathering in his palms. Another strike followed, then another, each tearing the ragged hole wider. Tom bared his teeth. A bug. What was that doing in the megalith? Two more blows screamed down to further rend the metal, and Tom allowed the energy to fade from his hands, a primal rage suffusing him. This was the first bug that had ever breached megalith. It must be made to pay. Simply bathing it in the cleansing fire of the energy was not enough to purge such a dishonor to the people. Tom crouched, then leapt 12 feet straight up to the door just as the monster slashed again. Tom reached through the gaping hole the monster had torn to grasp its retreating talon, wrenching the appendage back through the hole. The thing made a strangled, surprised, screeching sound as Tom braced his feet against the door on either side of the gray gash, still holding fast to its arm. Using the monster as an anchor, he held himself in place and reached his other hand through the gap, trying to grasp anything within range. His fingers slipped off the thing's slick, hard exoskeleton, and he growled deep in his throat. then reached up higher on the arm he held and began pulling the creature toward the ragged hole. As if he were climbing hand over hand up a rope, he drew the monster's limb through the hole. It screeched again, this time in panic, as Tom hauled on that arm with the implacable strength of the people. Then he could see the juncture where the limb met its body, and he twisted, feeling the limb crack as he shoved it upward at an unnatural angle. He reached through the hole again, his hand scrabbling once more off the monster's carapace. After a furious, desperate moment, he found purchase, catching the edge of one of its armored plates and heaving. The monster thrashed madly now as he drew it inexorably toward him, finally releasing the broken limb to reach through the hole and catch hold of another of the beast's plates. Then Tom had a real hold on its body, and he howled his triumph. His vision went red as the Iku took him once more. The next few seconds passed in a blur. Tom's vision was completely black, and he felt as if the strength of 1,000 of the people coursed through him. What had been an inexorable pull became a tremendous heave, and he wrenched the bug's body through the hole it had made in the alloy of the door. It was like putting a moth through a fan. Carapace crumpled and gore exploded across Tom's body. He howled again, his vision slowly clearing as the life fled from the creature's broken husk, shredded by its passage through a hole far too small for it. His effort had unbalanced him, and he fell, the twitching wreckage of what had, a moment ago, been a living bug, still clutched in his hands. Tom released the creature's corpse in midair and twisted to bring his feet back under him. He snarled to himself, belatedly realizing that he should have tried to drain the monster instead of simply shredding it. The Iku were troublesome, and letting them become the master, even for a moment, was stupid and dangerous. Tom landed in a crouch, then threw his head back and howled. However wasteful he'd been, his triumph was sweet, and he savored it, until he looked up to see another of the creatures climbing through the hole in the door above. Wrenching the first bug through the hole had widened it just enough for the next to wriggle through intact, and there was another behind it. He barely had time to set himself before the first one jumped straight at him. Tom lost sight of the second monster as he pivoted to avoid the leap, and the creature landed directly in front of him. Tom bared his fangs and leapt forward, grasping for it. No bug would invade his home while he lived. This time, his struggle was a blur in his conscious mind, his opponent a mass of thrashing limbs and mandibles. He registered very little except the monster's beady black eyes and his own rage, partly because he had to expend almost as much energy fighting off the Iku as the bug. He would not lose control again, and he didn't, not this time. Twice he tried draining the bug, but its hide was resistant to the energy. It shrugged off his attempts, breaking his concentration both times by slashing at him. After what felt like an hour of dodging and maneuvering, Tom finally managed to get beside the monster. It was all he needed. With a snarl, he seized the joint where one leg met its body and pulled. Bugs were dangerous, but the people were stronger. The crystalline matrix of Tom's body flowed with the energy of life, and he wrenched at the leg, ineffectually. His body was still starved of energy. He felt weak, almost feeble despite his rage, twisting the creature's leg. It squealed and screeched and then started thrashing. Tom gritted his teeth and redoubled his efforts, wrenching hard. There was a pop, and the leg actually pulled out of the bug's abdomen. Tom smiled darkly and stuck his hand inside the hole, now pumping ichor. Sweet energy flowed into his matrix, directly out of the thing's body. It was helpless before him without its hide to shield against the energy. The bug went mad, thrashing at him in a frenzy of sharp limbs and something that looked like spiky, prehensile wings. But only for a moment. Its body puffed to dust as Tom laid back his head and howled, the monster's very life suffusing him, becoming his own. His triumph only lasted a moment. He stared around, trying to find the other. Where had it gone? Ah! He spotted it in the corner across from him, crouched over something, and reached out with his newly acquired energy, grabbing the bug from behind with ropes of green power and dragging it toward him. It turned as he pulled and sprang straight at him, and this one was so close he couldn't dodge. The bug crashed into Tom's chest, scrabbling at him with its mandibles as one scythe-like appendage slashed down toward his head. Tom kicked the thing in the head to push that maw away from him, as all four of its insectoid arms windmilled, trying to slash him. Through his rage, a note of caution reached him from his more sensible side. The monster's huge talons could open him up like a rotten sack, with or without his crystalline skin. One arm darted toward him, searching for an opening. He caught the descending blow in an open palm, twisted the creature's appendage around, and strained it until it snapped with a satisfying crack. He was stronger now, much stronger. He gloried in his power as the creature flailed, keening. The only problem was, it still had three arms, all reaching for him at once, and he was in front of this one rather than beside it. Tom dodged and blocked, using the energy to entangle one appendage while the other two slashed at the wall beside him. The bug pressed him backward into the corner, its mandibles extending, and Tom tripped, falling flat on his back as it crawled over him. Tom straight-armed the thing in its hideous face, trying to push it back, but only found his hand inside the foul creature's writhing maw, its mandibles slicing impossibly through the crystalline skin of his arm. Tom smiled and clamped down with his fingers, grasping the inside of its throat and reaching out to rip the energy of life out of its body. This one didn't thrash. Instead, its body seized and twitched, then crumpled to icy cold dust, covering him in the foul-smelling stuff. The dissonance between the almost unbearably sweet flow of power into his core as the monster crumbled and the unpleasant sensation of being covered in its remains was distantly repugnant. But then Tom was lost to the world. For a long, sweet moment, he reveled in the hot euphoria as the skin of his forearm knit back together where the monster had slashed him. As some measure of reality returned, Tom blinked, trying to clear his eyes. There could be more of them. He fought to regain his bearings. Then he froze. The razor-sharp tip of a talon hovered directly between his eyes, wobbling slightly. It took a moment for his vision to trace the talon up the creature's arm, and it took another moment for his confusion to clear. The human male was there, the severed arm clutched in his hands, blood flowing from a gash on his face, Morse licking his side as he gasped, hatred shining from his eyes. The man's bloody visage glaring at him as the talon before his face wobbled more and more. The man had been fighting the second bug, using this torn-off limb from the first that Tom had wrenched through the door. Tom remembered the final bug crouched over the human, and Tom could see from the blood pumping from the man's side that it had hurt him badly. It must have been on the very edge of finishing him when Tom pulled it off. Tom stared into those eyes as the talon scraped his forehead, its impossibly sharp blade scoring his crystalline skin. He had killed the man's mate, and now the man himself was dying where he stood, his lifeblood pumping out on Megalith's deck. It was a single moment, frozen in time, upon which Tom's life and that of the human hung. The borrowed weapon was practically touching Tom's eye. Perhaps he could have moved, could have snatched it away, but the anguish written on that human face moved him in a way he hadn't felt since before his mother. Then the severed limb clattered to the floor and the man turned away. His face a mask of pain that plainly came as much from his heart as from his wounds, grievous as they were. Tom stared after him. Then with a sigh that turned into a snort as dust half choked him, he staggered to his feet to follow the retreating human. Two steps later, the man collapsed, and Tom was there to catch him, his own body now fortified by the energy the bugs had so unwillingly provided him. Tom was no healer, but the human was going to die if he didn't act. He reached out with the energy of life, using the death he had inflicted on his enemies and that which he had taken from the man's own mate, to restore life to one who justly hated him.
The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks,
and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you.
That ends The Boy from the Megalith. Thank you, Elijah. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you, Mel. I appreciate it.
Of course. And
thank you, everybody, for watching. That is the end of From the Void. And the only other book that I currently have published is The Veil of Mysteries. It is, however, the longest book that I have published, and we will get started on that one next week. That is the sequel to Brightstar and the next, I suppose you would say, after From the Void in the series. So, all right, everybody. Well, I will catch you next time, and thank you, Elijah. Thank you, Mel.
And thank you.
See everybody later.